Ever feel a little overwhelmed? Okay, maybe a lot overwhelmed? Why do we get into these states? And more importantly, what can we do when we get there? Stay tuned.
If your desire is to become spiritually stronger, emotionally healthier, and relationally smarter, you're at the right place. Speaker and writer Stephanie Smith inspires and equips you to achieve these three key aims. If you're a parent, you'll also learn how to raise empowered kids ready for adulthood. Let's get started.
Last week, when this podcast first airs, will have been World Mental Health Day. And that is something I'm so grateful to see has become more and more a part of our language and our culture and our awareness. Not that we always handle it well and handle it right. There's still a lot of room for growth and understanding there, but at least it's on the map. And one of the things about mental health is also true for us with our physical health, our emotional, our relational, our spiritual health, our financial health. And that is, by default, we don't just naturally become healthy people. Oh, I wish that were not the case. I wish it was just the opposite. And this is one of the defining differences between childhood and adulthood. Because you see, kids don't have to wake up every day when they're, say, 5 years old, and they don't have to say, you know, I think today I am going to decide to grow. I think I'm going to try to learn something new today. I'm going to grow my self-awareness today. You know, I've been kind of snarky with my siblings recently. I think I'm going to work on building better sibling relationships today. Doesn't happen. Now, it's not a matter that in terms of all of their emotional and spiritual and relational development that kids just naturally default to growth. That's not true either. But in many ways, kids have this innate momentum to grow, not only physically, but they have this innate curiosity. They want to learn. And usually that stays alive and it grows unless it is kind of, quote, educated out of them, or they lose the appetite because they're fed so much mental and emotional junk that they stop losing the appetite for what is really healthy. You know, I wish it were true that there was some part of our life that just by default stayed healthy, that it just grew. I mean, wouldn't it be awesome if we could say, you know what? Okay, I get that I have to work on my relationships in order for them to thrive and to prosper. Okay, I get that. But could my physical health just default to just growth? I mean, could it just default to staying healthy? Like can muscles not just grow themselves every day? Because man, wouldn't it be nice if just think of all the energy that I could have and how much more equipped I would be to show up for my relationships and to show up in all these other aspects of life if I didn't have to ever be concerned about my physical health. I would sign up for that plan. Unfortunately, it's just not a reality-based option. And one of the defining differences between childishness and adulthood, healthy adulthood, I don't mean adulthood by age, but I mean adulthood by maturity, is that we recognize every single aspect of life is going to require consistent, ongoing intentionality. You can't just say, you know what, I'm going to be physical fit from the time that I'm 25 to 45, and then I'm going to spend the next 20 years just kind of coasting on that fitness. Doesn't work that way. Somebody can be fit for 25 years, 30, 40 years, and then if they stop doing the things that maintain or even increase that fitness, guess what the body does? The body doesn't say, hey, you know what? You've worked so hard. For 20 years, you have been showing up with good exercise and good eating habits and good rest and hydration. And we are going to now reward you for the next 10 years even with continued ongoing good health. You don't have to do that anymore. You can stop all of that. You can sleep just as carelessly as you want to. You can eat whatever you want. You don't have to stay hydrated. And guess what? We're just going to maintain these systems for the next 10 years that you've worked so hard to build for the last 20. Doesn't happen. And it doesn't happen in our mental, spiritual, emotional, financial, or relationships either. Every aspect of life as an adult requires intentionality. And there's the cost to that. And the cost is sometimes life just kind of piles up on us and we feel kind of like ganged up on, and then we hit overwhelm. And the funny thing is that even after we have gone through these cycles for many, many years or decades, we often end up kind of surprised that we're at this place of overwhelm. It's like, how did that happen? And it's like, well, because that's also just part of this nature of life. Now, I don't mean that we can't do anything to mitigate that. But I do think it's a little unrealistic to think that if we just do everything right, we will hit a certain point in our life where overwhelm will never happen to us again. Because it's not just our own choices that create situations where we get into overwhelm. I mean, there are plenty of other things that happen that we have no control over, that we have no say over. They're not the result of our choices. They're the result of living in the world that we live in. They're the result of other people's choices that impact us. And it creates this place that we get to of overwhelm. So what do we do when we get to these places of overwhelm? I don't want to make this simplistic in the sense of saying it doesn't matter why you are in overwhelm. It doesn't matter what your situations are, because there are things that the person who is in overwhelm, where they have no food, they have no adequate clothing needs that are met, they don't have shelter. There's a direness to that type of overwhelm that needs a different response than someone who was overwhelmed because their kids have 15 different scheduled activities and tests at school and everything this week. But there are some principles that apply. They're not everything that we need, but they are some things that can help us when we get to these places of overwhelm. Now, to begin with this, I want to go back and I want to share with you just a reminder from the story of one of history's great poets. He's also a great warrior. He was a king, and you probably have heard of him if you are at all familiar with the Bible, or maybe you're not even familiar with the Bible, but you've heard about him because he is iconic enough that you've probably come across his name at some point, and that is King David, the writer, not of all the Psalms, but of many of the Psalms. And in the first book of Samuel in the Old Testament in the Bible, there was a situation where David had been on the run from who was then king of Israel, King Saul, because King Saul was paranoid. He had no legitimate reason to be fearful of David, but he was. He was just convinced that David was out to take his kingdom from him, which was not at all the case. And David tries over and over and over again to prove his loyalty to Saul and can never do it. So he has been on the run. He has been driven away from his home for a number of years now. I mean, this wasn't like two or three. This was like over 10 years. He has been living this nomadic kind of life through no fault of his own. And at a certain point, he ends up saying, I'm so tired of being chased. I just want to be safe. I just want to have a place of rest. He was overwhelmed. And he goes and he lives in the land of the Philistines, who were enemies of Israel. And he lives there with his band of men and their wives and their children. So it's not just like David and a few other guys. I mean, this is a pretty big entourage. It's kind of like a small village that has traveled with him and lives in this land of the Philistines. And the day comes where they meet up and go to war with Israel. And the Philistine king says, David, you're not going with us. I believe in you, but the leaders of my military are skeptical that if we get into this battle, that you are going to turn and you're going to fight against us and not for us. And so you and your men have to go back. Well, while all of this had been going on, and David and his men had been away getting prepared to go fight against their home country, there was a band of raiders that came into the town where David and his army lived, and they carried off all of the women and the sons and the children and the daughters who had been left there. So when David and his men go back and find out what had happened and that this city had been destroyed, they were incredibly upset. They were overwhelmed. They were so fatigued. They were so frustrated. And they decide that they're going to take it out on David to the point that they are thinking that they're just going to kill him. And it says in the 1 Samuel 30, verse 6, chapter 30, verse 6, but David strengthened himself in the Lord his God. So here's the thing. It is wonderful, and we need to have friends and family and relationships, maybe counselors and mentors and coaches who can help us through times of overwhelm. But there are situations that we end up in where basically there's only so much that anybody else can do, and it just comes down to what we're going to do and our decisions that we're going to make. And basically, we have to be prepared to strengthen ourselves and the Lord our God. So how do we do that in a very practical way? I'm going to give you 5 steps. The first one is to remember. One of the reasons that I'm an advocate for keeping a gratitude journal or some kind of journal that lists for you and your family the things that you've seen God do on your behalf is because we all need times to remember. Not just the God of the universe who performed miracles thousands of years ago. We need to know the God of now who has been present and showing up in our lives. And going back through a remembrance journal or a gratitude journal is a fantastic way to remind ourselves and to remember the provision of God in our lives, not just somebody else's life, but in our life. We also then turn to the Bible to remember the character and the goodness of God as he displayed it in other people's lives. All throughout the scriptures, from the very beginning of the Old Testament all the way through the end of the New Testament, one of the things that we are told over and over and over and over and over again is to remember. You know, the one practice that Jesus gave his disciples before he left this earth, before his death and his resurrection. He didn't give them a whole list. Hey, here are 10 practices for you to follow. He gave them one specific, tangible practice. Now, there were instructions about going into the world and making disciples, but in terms of something that has a physical component to it, it was communion. It was break bread and drink this juice, drink this wine, break this bread, and do this on a regular basis in remembrance of me. Why did he do that? I mean, did he think they were going to forget him after he'd been gone for a couple of years? No, it wasn't that they were going to forget Jesus. It was a matter that it brings us back to remember his work for us. It recenters us. And so remembering for us is a powerful practice that we can implement. We don't have to wait till we're overwhelmed, but it sure is a good thing to do when we hit that place of overwhelmed. The second practical step that we can take is to record. And whether this is recording the good things that we do have in our lives, even in those times of overwhelm. If it is also can just be recording our laments, it can be recording our grief and our sadness and our overwhelm, recording our needs. There is something about writing down our experiences, our thoughts, and our feelings that give them a language and a place, and that is a form of honoring those things. Another benefit of recording things and writing them down is because it takes them off of the hamster wheel of our mind. You know, our thoughts can just go round and round and round and we make no progress. And there's something about the physical act of writing it down, whether you do that longhand or you type those out, that moves those out of the hamster wheel of our head into a constrained form on a piece of paper. And in that process, we're able to look at and to see, okay, here's all of this stuff that is going on. You know, sometimes it's just a matter of writing down everything that has been going on in our life. You know, I did this recently, hitting this place of overwhelm, and I just started writing down all of the things that were concerning me, all the weights that I was carrying. And when I looked at it, I was like, you know, that's a lot of stuff, Steph. I mean, if I was talking to somebody else, I would have said that to them. I wouldn't have said, well, you know, I really don't see all that. I would have said, that is a lot. And sometimes we're much more kind to other people and we're more quick to say, you know, that's a lot that you've got going on in our life. But we carry so much with us, and sometimes we need to remind ourselves, you know what, this is a lot. And that isn't about playing a victim. It's about owning the reality of our life. And it's about honoring those weights, those concerns, those needs. And when we write them down, typically one of two things happens. One is it affirms for us, hey, you know what? This really is a lot. And sometimes we're going, wow, I didn't realize it really was that much. And sometimes it also does the opposite. And we look at it and we go, okay, you know what? Actually, it's not that bad. You know, I'm overwhelmed because of all these things that I'm thinking that I need to do. But when I write them down, I realize, oh, yeah, there's a lot. But when I really start looking at how much time all those things are going to take, that's okay. That's doable. I can get that done. So don't undervalue the benefit of recording and writing things down. The third step is to reorient. It's when I choose to turn my focus onto what God has placed within my abilities and my control, instead of focusing on everything that impacts me, that legitimately might cause me concern or fear or whatever, but instead of focusing on that, I intentionally reorient to say, God, what can I do here? What's within my ability and my skill set and my control that I can do to address this situation? And where do I need to let things go? I mean, there are things I can't control. I can't even necessarily influence in terms of a situation or somebody else, but I can always look at my own attitude and my own perspective. And when I do this, when I reorient, so I'm not focusing on everything that's going on, everything I've written down on my paper, it's like I bring it to God and I say, okay, God, now here's all this stuff. What am I supposed to do with this? And that leads to the fourth step, because inevitably there are things that I need to release. And it might be physical tasks that I need to do. And I look at it and I go, you know what? I really don't have to do that. Maybe I have assigned an arbitrary deadline to something. Oh, I have to get this done by next Tuesday. And you know what? Maybe it doesn't really have to be done by next Tuesday. Maybe I've just added this arbitrary deadline to it that's not really real, and I can change that deadline. It might also be times where I can say, you know, there are things here I can delegate, or there are things here that I'm just going to have to let go of. They're just not going to get done. And there's also those aspects of relationships. It's not about tasks. It's about our concerns, our laments, our fears that also we release. And not just that we release in a way that we don't care about them, but we say, God, I've done everything I can do about this. I'm going to choose to turn my attention. Again, I kind of go back to step three. I'm going to reorient my focus. And what we choose to release joy into the world. So it's not just about releasing the anxiety. It's also about choosing then to release joy into the world by showing up for ourselves and showing up for others. Not because I have to and I must, but because I want to, because I choose to. And then lastly, it is to re-energize. And this can take a couple of different forms. Sometimes this comes through rest. Sometimes activity is actually what re-energizes us. Now, sometimes rest can be exhausting. I mean, you can rest yourself into exhaustion because sometimes getting things done or getting out and moving reorients your biological body so that it releases empowering chemicals and feel-good chemicals and neurotransmitters and all of that stuff. And there is a re-energizing that takes place oftentimes through activity a whole lot more than just rest. But then sometimes we just do need to rest in order to re-energize. Practically speaking, we can do this through reading the word, through worship, and through movement, through physical movement. We can also look at, if we're going to release joy into the world, well, what brings me joy? What emotionally and mentally brings me joy that I can do that then is released into the world? And relationally, it can be by being with others who are nourishing and uplifting, not people that are just going to overwhelm us even more than we already are. If we always rely on other people, we will eventually end up in a situation kind of like David found himself, where we just don't have that option. So what can we do? We do what David did, and we choose to say, God, I'm going to strengthen myself in you. I am going to remember your faithfulness to me. I'm going to remember your calling on my life. I'm going to remember your promises to me. I'm going to remember that I have a purpose. I'm going to remember that I am loved by you. I'm going to record. I'm going to write down all of my laments. I'm also going to write down all of those things that I have to be grateful for. I'm going to reorient. I'm not going to be a victim to whatever thought pops into my head. I will choose maturity, and I will choose what I'm going to think about and focus on. I will release, whether it's activities or it is emotional and mental stress, and then I am going to re-energize. Well, my friend, I hope today that this finds you in a place where you are not overwhelmed, but if you are, follow these steps. And if you're not in one of those places right now, file them away, because it just happens. It happens even when we have great habits and everything. Life eventually kind of conspires to bring us into a place of overwhelm. So we don't need to beat ourselves up when we get there. We can look at, okay, are there things I need to change? So maybe I don't end up here as often. But sometimes we can do all the right stuff and it's still gonna happen for us. But we don't have to sit there and just accept it. There are things that we can do in order to move from a place of overwhelm into a place of strength. And that's exactly what David ended up doing. And after he had spent time and he had strengthened himself in the Lord, he got his people together. He got his men together. They went after that band of raiders. They recaptured every single one of the women and children, took them back, took back all of their possessions, and they moved from a place of overwhelm and despair to a place of renewal and re-energizing. And they were able actually to go home and to a place of restoration. All right, my friend, I am thankful that you are here, and I invite you to share this podcast leave a rating and a review. And I so appreciate those of you who do that. Also, you're always free to send me an email and just share with me about how this podcast has impacted you. And if you haven't already, go to the website, stephaniepresents.com, sign up there for the weekly newsletter, High Impact. Why? Because I want to help you to recognize and maximize your immeasurable, eternal, and irreplaceable impact. I'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening. Visit the website, stephaniepresents.com, and sign up for High Impact to join the mission of building spiritually strong, emotionally healthy, and relationally smart women and families. You can also book Stephanie to speak at your event and check out additional resources. Together, we can invite and equip generations to engage fully in God's grand story.